Well, the funny thing about construction, it's the one industry women make 96 cents on the dollar. We're an industry that really has progressed in the sense of pay equity. The challenges is like any industry, if it's male dominated, is just the cultural part. You know, I still get mistaken for the executive assistant as opposed to the owner of the company.
In association with Business Forward, this is Answering America. I'm your host, Ed Meyer.
And I'm Jim Doyle, president of Business Forward Foundation.
And I'm Allie Berry, also with Business Forward.
We're going to welcome to the podcast Denise Burgess. Welcome to the show, Denise.
Thank you so much. Such an honor to be on the podcast.
Wonderful. Well, tell us a little bit about your construction management company.
Burgess Services is a 45-year-old second-generation owned construction firm. My late father started the company and I took it over. I've been here for 25 years and we do major commercial construction management with an emphasis on mechanical, which for most people, it's heating and air conditioning.
And about how large is your company?
We are a multi-million dollar company. Most days we do construction management for anywhere from $10 million to $45 million contracts.
So today we're talking about the gender pay gap, and I'm wondering if you could tell us a little bit about what your experience with that looks like in the construction industry.
Well, the funny thing about construction, it's the one industry women make 96 cents on the dollar. We're an industry that really has progressed in the sense of pay equity. The challenges is like any industry, if it's male dominated, is just the cultural part. I still get mistaken for the executive assistant as opposed to the owner of the company. But at the same time, I also can expect to be paid almost equally to my competitor or my peer. I'm still trying to work really hard to get that 4 cents back in my pocket, but at least it's four and not 20 or 40 cents.
Moving on to paid leave, opponents of paid leave often point to the challenges that a national policy like that would have on small businesses like yours. What would you like to see included in a paid leave bill that would provide flexibility for workers and with families, but also protect small businesses from uncertainty and increased cost?
You know, what I really would like to see is flexibility for business owners. So when I have female employees or parents who need to have paid leave, I really try to negotiate one-on-one to make sure that we're meeting their needs along with the needs of the company. And too many times, I think there's legislation to try to cookie cutter everybody, and the focus is on large firms as opposed to small firms. It really is talking about and having a real conversation about what's beneficial for both sides of that coin and making sure we both meet the goal of meeting the needs of the family and also meeting the needs and goals of the company itself.
As a female business leader, when you see administrations like the Trump administration roll back progress on equal pay, reproductive health care, affordable child care, what does that signal to you and how do you proceed from there?
What you need to do is have an internal culture so no matter who's in office, it can withstand those kind of microaggressions and megaaggressions. It's disheartening, but it's also an opportunity for you to say, you know what, this is not how I want my company to run. This is how I want my company to run, and take control of what you can, making sure that your employees are taken care of and that your company is protected. At the end of the day, the biggest financial decision that a woman has to make is to have a child or not to have a child. The biggest financial decision that you have as an owner of a business is to make sure that your company is profitable, because you have to make sure that you're meeting all the needs of your employees.
Did you say microaggressions and mega aggressions or microaggressions yeah. and MAGA aggressions? I could see it being either way.
Yeah. Any given day, I kind of look for it. It's like, okay, is that a micro one or is that a mega one? So it's on a daily basis right now.
What's one policy change you'd like to see the next president implement to support working women?
They really recognize working women and they recognize the needs of working women. So when you're making policy, to have them at the table, it seems like decisions are being made for us and we're not making those decisions ourselves. So I really would like the next administration to really bring women to the table and say, what are your needs? Not perceived needs, but actually listening and implementing at the same time.
Denise, thank you so much for joining us today on the podcast. We really appreciate it.
Thank you so much. I appreciate it.
We'd like to welcome economist and professor at University of Michigan and an expert, one of the country's leading experts on all things involving working families, Betsy Stevenson. Welcome to the podcast, Betsy.
Oh, thanks for having me. It's great to talk to you.
Let's start out by talking about paid leave. If a small business owner came to you and said, yeah, I believe that it's a good idea that a worker should be able to take off a few months to care for a disabled parent, for example, but I can't afford to pay them while they're away for that time. What do you say to that small business owner? What are some of the policy ideas that are out there that can address these concerns?
Most Americans think that employers should be asked to pay for that, but I actually think that's a really bad idea. In fact, that is what most developed countries think as well. This is not something where we want to say to an individual small business owner, hey, your worker just needs to take 2 months off, keep paying them their salary. No, what we need is a system that allows people to continue to be paid when they need to take time off, when they need to take time off for childbirth, to care for a sick family member. But like Social Security, we need to pay for this through some kind of payroll tax where we all chip in and then we all get payments when we need them. Research shows that those kinds of taxes primarily mean that workers end up paying for these programs themselves, but they're still valuable. They're valuable because they remove the burden of having an unexpected absence from work, and they allow people to continue to manage their budget even if they get hit when they're not really expecting it. And it's particularly important when people are welcoming a new child into the home, because that's often at the beginning of people's working careers, at a time where they might not have had a lot of time to have accumulated savings in order to pay for 3 months out of work.
A lot of people across the political spectrum tend to agree that paid family leave is something that they would like to support. And across Republicans, Democrats, people generally agree it's a good idea. And we've recently seen Ivanka Trump sort of spearhead this paid family leave effort out of the Trump administration. Could you talk about if the Trump administration has put forward any serious proposals? And then a follow-up to that would be, if we set aside the dysfunctional state of Congress for a moment, do you think that there could be meaningful progress made on this issue within the current administration?
So the Trump administration did pass a tax credit for 2018 and 2019 for employers that offered paid leave as part of the Tax Cut and Jobs Act. I think the challenge with that is it didn't do very much to increase the availability of paid leave, but it did give a large tax cut to businesses that offer paid leave already. So the question is, if we're going to use our tax dollars to try to make paid leave more available to a wider swath of people, I just don't think we can do it by simply giving tax credits to the businesses that offer paid leave. We've already seen that employers that have highly compensated, specialized employees know they need to offer these kinds of benefits in order to hang on to them. They faced really high costs of trying to replace these workers if they quit as a result of not having access to the benefits. What the Trump administration essentially did was gave the businesses that employ these highly compensated workers a tax cut for employing highly compensated workers. That's not where our problem lies. Our problem is with lower and middle wage and working class workers for whom employers are not offering these benefits. So that's why I'm not that optimistic that we would emerge with a paid leave proposal in the current environment. And I think that's because the kind of paid leave proposal that's really going to matter for people is one in which everybody has access to being able to take some paid time off. And the way to do that is by giving people access to some kind of income, some kind of benefits when they're taking time off. Let's just think about the Family Medical Leave Act, we know that the Family Medical Leave Act already leaves out a very large share of workers, particularly the workers who need those benefits the most. What we need to make sure as we pass paid leave, that it ends up being much more inclusive than even the unpaid Family Medical Leave Act ever was.
So a good business leader will keep a close eye on her competitors. What can we learn from other advanced economies about how they support working families and the impact on their economies and societies at large?
Well, I think the bottom line is other countries are succeeding more in supporting working families. And what we see is that they have higher female labor force participation rates as a result, and that has supported higher higher GDP for them. All we have to do is look across to the many, in fact, all developed countries that offer paid maternity leave, most of whom offer greater subsidies for paid childcare, see that these economies are thriving, that they're doing really well.
We got a lot of candidates that are running for office, although it seems to be getting smaller by the week. They talk about their support for working family issues. What are you listening for specifically that will really give you a sense that candidate gets it, that they understand the issues and that they have implementable ideas on how to address?
So the way I think about this, most people know that many families don't have enough money saved to be able to handle an unexpected expense like a car breaking down. But I want to make sure that candidates really understand many families don't know what they would do if they faced an unexpected illness. We hear that in discussions about healthcare, but it goes way beyond healthcare. A simple case of the flu can leave families scrambling. The parents can't even take a day off to care for themselves when they get the flu, so they go to work, spreading illnesses among their coworkers. They send their kids to school sick, which in turn creates this hostility between parents and schools, where schools are angry at parents and saying, you know, you sent your kid to school with a fever, it's spreading germs, we don't want them here. But the parents are like, I can't take time off. I don't know what to do with them if I bring them home. The bottom line is life is simply too hard for working families. Everything they face from the beginning of the birth of a child, from the beginning of pregnancy through to the end of life, there's just too many places where it's too hard, and our candidates can make it easier. We can make it easier for people to get the prenatal care that they need to have a healthy baby, to take time off to bond with that child so that child gets the right start in terms of early childhood investment, early childhood education, and the parents get the right start to raising their children so that the marriages in which children are born have a greater opportunity to thrive, because not being able to take time off at the birth of a child can cause enormous amounts of marital conflict and tension that never gets resolved after that birth of the child. We can think about the inequality in access to things that make life easy. I am looking for a broader understanding of what we would need to do to create an egalitarian system in which we could have the ideal dream of a meritocracy where everyone does have the opportunity to completely succeed.
Thank you very much, Betsy. We appreciate your insights and your time with us.
It's great talking with you today. Thank you.
Thank you, everybody, for joining us. And for more facts, data, and analysis, visit answeringamerica.org and read all about the questions that business leaders are asking across America. Thank you for joining us, and we'll look forward to talking to you on the next episode. Answering America is a production of Business Forward, hosted by me, Ed Meyer, and Jim Doyle. Produced by Jim Scott Polsonelli and Michael Herrenstein. Engineered by Mason Carlton. Recorded at Powerhouse Studios in Alexandria, Virginia. Special thanks to Caitlin Bruckner and the Business Forward team, Ali Berry, Jana Platt, Alex Passanen, Susie Fitzgerald, Alexia Lipman, and Colin Buchanan. Thanks for listening. See you next time.